And today is World Rhino Day, a special day to celebrate the honored herbivore, but at the same time, bring much needed awareness to the plight of rhino poaching. And today I'm delighted to say that renowned wildlife photographer Margot Raggett joins me in studio to talk about her photography, her new coffee table book, Remembering Rhinos, and her conservation efforts into rhinos and elephants. It's a great pleasure to welcome you to Cape Talk today, Margot. How are you doing?
Thank you. Yes, it's great to be here in Cape Town. Thank you.
Wonderful. So what led you to become a wildlife photographer?
Do you know, I'd actually been going on safari for about 15 years before I took any pictures. I just loved wildlife and got so lost in the moment of watching wildlife on safari. But then I went on a safari led by Jonathan and Angela Scott, who are very famous wildlife photographers. And they did lots of presentations about their work and really inspired me. So I went back and bought myself a decent camera and started from there.
Oh, that's incredible. I mean, excuse my ignorance and just to expose my stereotyping, I imagined you'd be wearing green and natural colors and Timberland boots.
Well, I wear a bit more of that when I'm out on the field, but the rest of the time I just dress normally like
absolutely.
Everyone else.
Oh, you look great. So have you always had a love for rhinos?
I have. I mean, I love all wildlife. And I particularly got moved about the plight for rhinos after I visited the last male northern white rhino up in Kenya last year. So that's a subspecies of white rhino, the northern whites, and there are only three left in the world now. There's only one male, so when they're gone, you know, that breed is extinct. And I was so emotional about meeting him and just thinking about what us humans are doing to rhinos that I just kind of decided I had to try and do something, and that's why we started producing this book, Remembering Rhinos.
And how do you actually get the images that you get? I can imagine it takes a lot of patience and a lot of stealth movement.
Yeah, I mean, often, usually I'm in a vehicle. You know, we will actually try and, you know, there's a lot of tracking. You can spend all day just looking, trying to find the animals. And then the thing you have to do is then spend a lot of time waiting for the right moment. So quite often animals will be asleep in a bush and not looking at you when you do eventually find them.
Yeah.
So patience is the key, really.
It's key.
Yeah, I can spend sometimes 12 hours waiting for a leopard to come down a tree just to take one shot of it.
Just to take one shot.
Yeah, so yeah, patience and really waiting for that moment.
I can imagine. I mean, have you had days go by where you're just out there for hours and find nothing?
Absolutely, yes. yeah, you can. So, you know, when you see wildlife photographers and the great portfolio they have, that comes from spending, you know, months and months and months in the field. You can't just go out on one day and hope to get great pictures. But fortunately, I love the bush anyway. So actually, if, you know, if I spend all day and I don't take any pictures, I've still had a wonderful day being out connecting with nature.
Yeah.
So I don't mind.
I guess you just have to love the outdoors as well when
you're
in your line of work. And what would you say makes an award-winning shot?
Well, I suppose I've analysed this quite a lot because I would like to win awards for my pictures. I think it's a couple of things. Either something that's just really unusual, so a behaviour that's never been seen before, or a species that's really rare, or, you know, just doing something clever with a technique that you've never seen before. So things like Wildlife Photographer of the Year is the Oscars of our industry and what people look for. And, you know, some of the pictures that they get are just incredible. But, you know, it might have taken months and months to think about how to take that picture before the actual picture was taken. So you're not going to get it just going out on one day unless, you know, a new species that's never been seen before suddenly runs in front of you and you manage to capture it.
And obviously the longer you do it, experience counts. I mean, then you know, that.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the process.
It does, and it allows you to have anticipation of what the animal's going to do and where it's going to go and how it's going to behave and how quickly it might move and things. So that definitely helps, yes.
Yeah. What kind of equipment do you use? I can imagine it's quite pricey.
Yes. I would say that there's a thing in lots of wildlife photographers get cross if you say to them, oh, that's a great picture, you must have a great camera, because the implication is that it's only the camera taking the picture. But I do truly believe that, you know, good gear makes a difference. It's about how sharp the images can be, how far you can zoom. My favorite lens that I have is a 400 millimeter 2.8 lens, which is very pricey and very heavy as well. So when I'm out with it as a woman, I get all these funny looks that I'm this woman with this huge kind of cannon sticking out from the vehicle that I'm shooting from.
Yeah.
But actually, it does make a difference for the kind of shots that you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
What kind of challenges do wildlife photographers like yourself face?
Well, as I said, finding the animals obviously is quite a trick. And you know, kind of anticipating the behaviour that's going to happen when you're there. So, you know, you can spend a week thinking, I just want to get one picture of a leopard coming down a tree, and you know, and then the day that it comes down on the other side of the trunk. So you've got nothing. So things like that can be really challenging.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's very important to be respectful of the wildlife and the animals, and not to get too close, and you know, it's something that's very important to me, so I won't push my luck in all the animal and make the animal uncomfortable, and sometimes that means that you can't get the picture in that way.
Right, I can imagine. Now, and I know with us human beings, we want to look as perfect as we can in a picture, and photoshopping can even sometimes ruin a picture because it looks too perfect.
Sure.
How much photoshopping goes into wildlife photography?
Well, do you know, there's a lot of ethics around this, and there's a general rule of thumb that I've discussed a lot with fellow wildlife photographers, and pretty much it's accepted that you can only do the amount of manipulation that you would have been able to do in the darkroom in the old film days. So actually dodging and burning, lightening or darkening a little bit would be things that we would do. A little bit of cropping, but not an awful lot. And I actually personally don't use Photoshop at all, and I actually am quite proud because it means I don't have the skill set to lift a rhino and put it into a different background.
Yeah.
But again, I think the rules that most people accept is that you shouldn't have added anything or taken anything away from the scene as it was seen, because actually part of it again is putting the time in. So to get that rhino in the perfect light, you don't just get it on one day. Mm-hmm. You spend months mm-hmm. and months. So if I just went back and took a rhino in bad light and kind of photoshopped some gorgeous light on it, I'm cheating, and you know that there's no pride in that.
I hear you. Yeah.
But there are people out there, unfortunately, and with social media there's some, you know, people out there kind of sharing stuff that aren't even their pictures, that they just photoshopped together from other things. So
yeah.
You have to kind of trust the photographers that you're following and be, you know, sure that they're doing the right thing with their
yes.
pictures.
And speaking of social media, tell us about the celebrity campaign that's being launched today.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. Thank you. So Remembering Rhinos, the book, I wanted to try and get some awareness for it today on World Rhino Day. And about 6 months ago, started approaching celebrities if they would have a picture of themselves with our book. And we've got the likes of Russell Crowe, Chris Martin from Coldplay, Michelle Pfeiffer's coming up later this afternoon, Kevin Peterson, he's been a supporter for a while, actually. So some really amazing...
Heavyweights. Those are quite heavyweights.
Yeah. I'm amazed myself, actually. But I think some of it is once you get a couple and you've got the big names, other people want to come on board as well. So that's kind of helped us. So every half an hour today across Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, we're sharing a new celebrity, and they're all getting shared and retweeted and everything. So it's really exciting. My phone is burning up.
Oh, that's perfect. We're very happy about that. And what is your favorite image and what is the background story behind it?
Do you know, actually, it's sadly for being World Rhino Day, it's of a leopard. But leopards are, I just think, the most beautiful creature, and I love spending time trying to see them. And I managed to get a shot of a leopard coming down a tree, a panning shot, which is something I've desperately tried to do. So panning is a technique for wildlife photography where you do a really slow shutter speed.
Mm-hmm.
So the animal, if you think you get the same, like motor racing, you might get a car zooming along and the car's sharp and the background is blurry.
Yes.
It's the same thing, but with a leopard coming down a tree diagonally, so the leopard is sharp and the background is blurry, and actually I'm just really proud because there's a technique. It was it took a lot to get that picture, but most non-photographers will look at panning shots and say, oh, it's blurry. But photographers will know what I'm talking about.
Now that I know, I'll definitely never say that. And what's it like seeing a leopard up close? How do they move?
Oh, they're just the most beautiful creature. Utterly, utterly beautiful. They're just elusive and standoffish. And, you know, if they don't want to be seen, you won't see them. And they're just so elegant and graceful. I get shivers every time I see one, really.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
We're going to chat a little bit more later. And if you've just joined us, we're chatting to Margot Raggett. And she's a rhino photographer. And we're celebrating World Rhino Day by chatting to how she's contributed contributed to general conversation around conservation. And what does World Rhino Day mean to you, Margot?
I think having a day where everyone really stops and thinks about rhinos is so, so important. The rate of poaching is incredible. You know, at least three a day in South Africa alone are being poached for their horn, which is made of keratin. It's the same as fingernails. It's absolutely useless and worthless and doesn't have any medicinal value. But they're worth more than their weight in gold on the black market. So, you know, rhinos are being attacked. Often they're left half dead, sadly. I don't mean to upset people, but, you know, just in a terrible state. The poachers don't care.
It's gruesome.
Absolutely gruesome. And it's just shocking that this goes on. So to have a day that everyone can really focus around and get behind, all of the wildlife photography community, conservationists, the celebrities we've got supporting us, and really shine a spotlight on it is so important.
It's absolutely important. Yeah. And what about these alleged medical properties? I mean, is that all just hogwash?
It is. I would say it's keratin. It's the same as fingernails. So I believe that if you had a huge, huge quantity, it would have the slight effect of like aspirin. It's slightly anti-inflammatory, but it means nothing. But actually in Asia now, it's not even that they're having it for medicinal properties. They call it a kind of pick-me-up or a kind of hangover cure. So I heard that if you go to a kind of very cool bars, you'll be offered a shot of rhino horn for $50. And it's just a little shot of vodka with rhino horn. That you knock back, and it's a kind of status symbol amongst your friends. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And we have to try and get the message out in Asia that, you know, that they're killing the species. It won't be around anymore if they carry on.
Yeah, and that it's happening at the cost of some really precious animals.
Absolutely.
And wildlife.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just ridiculous and so infuriating.
Yeah. We got a question in via WhatsApp, and you are being asked, would you try your hand at sea life shooting?
I would love to. There are so many different species that I still want to photograph, for sure. And also for wildlife, the books that we're doing. So it was remembering elephants last year and remembering rhinos this year. Lots of people are saying, why don't you do remembering sharks or remembering whales? So, you know, at some point, I'm sure we'll get round to all of those species. So, yeah, I'd love to. I've been to South Africa before and seen the whales, which I did love. So, yeah, I'd love to get out there.
And on the topic of shooting other types of wildlife, has it happened sometimes that you're waiting for a leopard or a rhino and then you actually happen to see something else that catches your eye and decide to shoot that in the meantime?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's sometimes, you know, you have a good idea of where you might see certain species. So leopards tend to kind of be in certain kind of forest-like areas rather than out on the open plains where you might see cheetahs. So, you know if you're going to one or the other that you've got a better chance of seeing that cat. But, you know, they all surprise you. I mean, wildlife, there are no rules. And actually, you know, I mean, it's not a species I wasn't expecting, but probably one of my most dramatic sightings was two lions fighting, which I went because I was told there was a couple of lions mating. And then when we got there, another male just came in at the right time. And these two males had the most enormous, you know, ferocious fight in front of us. And I managed to photograph it holding
my
breath.
That's incredible.
But yeah, you just never, that's why wildlife is so wonderful. Wildlife photography, because you never know.
Unpredictable.
What you're gonna
see. Exactly. Yeah. What are your views on rhino monitoring and other protective measures?
I think we have to try everything we possibly can. I mean, the money that we're raising, Remembering Rhinos, the book, we pre-funded it last year on Kickstarter, which means when we sell it now, all the money goes to rhino conservation.
That's wonderful, yeah.
So we're doing everything from kind of, you know, whether it's tagging the rhinos or doing anti-poaching measures or community relations. I mean, so many different things that we're trying. So, I mean, education in Asia, as I said, I think has to be absolutely key. And we've got some plans to try and support some projects doing that as well. But today I just had a message actually from Kevin Peterson, who has been supporting us, and he'd been approached to do some dehorning. And we're looking at maybe we can give some money to that as well. So, you know, I don't want to spread ourselves too thinly, but everything, every technique that we can try, you know, I've heard of, you know, dogs that are specially trained to go out and kind of protect against poachers, even horses that are doing the same. Horseback riders. So yeah, we've got to try everything.
And any thoughts around just methods and tools that can be used to educate people around the dangers of rhino poaching?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, actually out in Asia, educating the next generation children is one of the most important things we can do. I mean, I remember back in the 70s when My mum had a fur coat that she was very proud of, and I came home from school and I was like, you can't wear a fur coat. It's, you know, it's just wrong, mum. And I think children can go and actually tell the adults that, you know, that what they're doing isn't right anymore. So we've done some schools lectures in the UK, and I've funded some books for school children in the past. So I think we'll be looking at doing more of that as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. From the mouths of babes.
Yeah, absolutely.
When did conservationists first start realizing that rhinos were at such huge risk and that numbers were dwindling very fast?
Do you know, their fortunes have kind of risen and fallen a bit. So actually back in the 60s, not many people realize this, but white rhinos got down to about 400. Literally, they were on the brink of extinction. And then a conservationist did a huge program of kind of relocation of rhinos and breeding program, and got them back up to the number that's 20,000 white rhinos, the southern white rhinos, that is, that are here today. But again, you know, suddenly in the last 3 years or so, it's massively spiked again, the poaching rate. So I think it's in the last 3-4 years that really everyone's become more and more concerned. And just seeing all of the images of the state these rhinos are being left in after being attacked, it's heartbreaking.
It is. And I mean, is it accurate that Africa's western black rhino was declared extinct in 2013?
Yeah, as I said, there are various subspecies of both the black and the white rhino. So yes, that's the case. And say that the northern white rhino is extinct in the wild, but there are just those three left up in Olpejeta now, but in Kenya, but I don't think you know, after them, you know, that is going to go as well. I mean, you know, we're just losing species, so many on this planet. It's just, you know, horrifying.
What inspired you and prompted you to make the book Remembering Wildlife?
Well, actually, I started with, as I said, remembering elephants. And actually, I was on safari in northern Kenya, and we got woken up really early by hyenas going crazy. And we went out to investigate what was going on. And it was an elephant who was about 14 years old who'd been poached. He had a poison arrow still in him, and he'd obviously just died and was being attacked. And I was so horrified, and I was kind of impotent with rage. And then I thought, I can't be impotent. I have to try something. So I started asking other wildlife photographers like Daryl Balfour, Shem Compion, Ross Cooper, James Suter, Marius Kurtzy, lots of South African well-known wildlife photographers, if they'd give me images for our book on elephant. And they all said yes. And that was such a success that we decided that we had to do a follow-up. So then, as I said, I then was earlier or later last year with the northern white rhinos and decided that rhinos had to be the next species that we had to give our attention to.
Yes. And if one were to want to get the book Remembering Rhinos, what can they expect to see in the book? What to look forward to?
It's beautiful. We've had it printed in Italy, so it's high quality, heavyweight paper, matte paper. And say it's 65 of the world's best wildlife photographers, and it's never really been done before, you know, apart from us with elephants last year, that all of these guys have contributed on one species to a book. So if you love rhinos, you know, that there isn't any better book for you, really, because it's just stunning, the images we've got.
Yes. Well, tell us about the Wild Shots conference happening tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm in Cape Town, actually. So wonderful. I'm very excited to be here. So Wild Shots is concentrating on wildlife photography. And there's lots of speakers throughout the day, including some of the photographers who've contributed to the book. So I'm very excited to see them as well. And we're all talking about wildlife photography and how to get the best images. And I'm going to be giving everyone hints about, you know, the book and the story behind the book and you know, trying to kind of promote that cause. But it's very exciting to be here.
It is,
that.
Definitely is. And one of our listeners has sent us a WhatsApp saying, your guest sounds incredible. I'd like to know, how does she make a living so that she can actually do all these amazing projects?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. It is hard to earn a living as a wildlife photographer. So I earn some money from that, but I used to work in marketing and PR, and I still do a little bit of that as well. So I'm kind of part-time, although for this project at the moment, I'm full-time.
You're full-time, it sounds like it.
I'm not earning very much at all, but I'm happy.
Yeah, as long as it makes you happy as well. Yeah. And another listener is asking, why concentrate on Western celebrities to get the message about rhino conservation across, would it also not be more productive to get Asian celebrities involved instead?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, to be honest, as I said, most of this campaign is pretty much just me, and I'm doing it from, you know, my kind of little home office in London, and I started by naturally speaking to people that I knew and asking them if, you know, who they knew. So again, to say that the education work in Asia that I'd really like to do, I need more contacts, but there's only so many hours in the day for me, and you know, as I didn't know any Asian celebrities to start with, I was pretty happy with Russell Crowe. I think a lot of people in Asia know Gladiator.
You nailed it.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. And just lastly, where can people get a hold of the book?
You can go to rememberingrhinos.com, mm-hmm. and you can order the book from there. And actually, there's a link on there as well to buy the elephant book if you missed out on that last year.
So. Oh, thank you so much for your time today. It was really a pleasure having you talk to us about conservation.
Thank you. It's been great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. Happy World Rhino Day.
Yes, indeed.